those episodes are amazing, and I'm going to be sharing some of the best little clips from all of them, as usual. But I do.
You've just tuned into Rebel Wellness Podcast, your resource for realigning and revitalizing your health and well-being. I'm your host, Kaylee, also known as Coach Kales. I'm a holistic health educator, certified nutritionist, and fitness professional of nearly a decade. I'm stoked to have you with us. You just joined a community of amazing souls who are ready to break free from the confines of the often outdated and confusing health advice all around us. Living in a world overwhelmed by quick fix diets and unrealistic beauty and body standards, us rebels stand for change. If you're like me, you're exhausted with the confusion and polarization plaguing the social media health scene. My mission is to empower you to step beyond today's diet culture. Adopt a holistic health approach paired with the foundations of science for lasting, well-rounded wellness. Through teaching you how to tune in and embrace your mind, body, and soul, we'll reject one-size-fits-all solutions, realigning you on a better path that honors your unique needs and values. With new episodes weekly, this podcast is your sanctuary for deep wellness exploration, featuring expert advice, real-life stories, and a true commitment to your growth. Your journey to better health and simplicity in life begins now. Let's jump right in. Welcome back to the show, Rebels. We are literally ending the year on episode 99, and I am so excited to launch season 3 at a beautiful 100 episode number. We didn't do that on purpose, or did we? You'll find out. But I'm really excited for today's Best of the Rebellion episode with little tidbits from some of our top favorited episodes from season 2. And we decided this year versus last year, we kind of separated it into the 3 major pillars of what Rebel Wellness covers, what we discuss. And today, you know, I had decided that we really are kind of honing in on the women's wellness side, and I kind of wanted to just combine it all. So it's like we had our nutrition best of. If you missed that like a couple weeks ago, go check those ones out. But this one, you know, I kind of wanted to just combine all of these conversations around some of the major women's wellness topics that, you know, were really important this year for a lot of people and that really stood out and that we got the most feedback via DMs on social media, or, you know, if it was some of my clients who listened, present or past, they would text me about it, which I am so grateful for you guys doing that. And I really hope that you continue to, because it helps us figure out exactly what you guys want to listen to, what you want me to talk about, what you want me to interview on, you know. So this episode is going to have some of our favorite little clips from several episodes. You know, some of them were covering the stubborn fat conversation, gut health conversation with Dr. Reeves, post-Ozempic, like can you maintain weight loss after using a semaglutide or tirzepatide? And the cortisol episode, literally one of the most talked about episodes with me from our listeners. And so that was such a great episode that I could not leave it out of our best of. And we also had a lot of conversations surrounding the post-birth control syndrome, as that is something that has become really popular to talk about the last several years, especially, you know, through TikTok or Health Talk and all of the different platforms that women are speaking out on their personal real experiences with birth control. And I'm so passionate about all of these conversations that women are starting to have a lot more openly. I would say that that's possibly the good side to exposure on social media, especially with a more casual kind of energy around it. But I will say that I really felt it was important for you guys to learn from, you know, my own experience, a lot of my clients' experience, and then the science behind it, because that's where a lot of those conversations on social media are kind of missing the mark, because they'll hear what somebody else says who might just be like a random health guru or just a girl who is like, is into health things and doesn't understand the science behind it, and it can be really misleading. So those episodes are amazing, and I'm going to be sharing some of the best little clips from all of them, as usual. But I do highly recommend you pop over to the show notes and go listen to the full episode if you haven't yet. If that is something that kind of sparks your interest, go listen to The Fool Guy, because you're going to get all that good information, and I highly recommend it. But there's also a lot of other great things going on in the show notes, so make sure you check all the resources out for you, such as join my newsletter on my website. You can go to the direct link there. There's no junk mail, trust me. And you can also, you know, take advantage of some of my affiliates, where you can get some really great discounts on companies that I trust and products that I trust. So that is going to be your best resource there. But as always, before we jump into all of these little best of clips, I do want to invite you to come join our Instagram party at Rebel Wellness Podcast or at Kaylee Loren. Again, those links are in there, so that you can come say hello and, you know, keep up with all the things that are outside of the podcast as we continue to grow. Okay, so enjoy all of these clips. Let me know if you had any favorites or anything was just not included that was your favorite. And hopefully we can kind of come back around and bring more of those topics into next season. All right, let's roll the clips. For today, I kind of wanted to hit you with some of the major pillars that I like all my clients to kind of think through every time they are assessing their health goals and kind of realigning themselves with a better, healthier body. And a lot of the times that means fat loss, but it's not exclusive to fat loss. Not everybody needs to lose fat. I think we are raised as young girls in a zone where like fat loss is a constant topic. You can be 80 pounds and think that you have to lose fat, and you can be 180 pounds and think that you have to lose fat. And everybody's different. That's a different topic for another time. I know season one, I had a few episodes that talk about that, like the scale episode especially. Check that one out if you have not. If you are new here, go back to that episode. It's great. We will link it in the show notes for you so it's a little easier to get there. But this conversation is for my girlies who are, you know, just straight up confused with what to do or follow. Everyone and their mom had success on this diet and you tried it and it just did not really work for you. Or you search around and all you hear is eat less, move more. And so you try to do that and your interpretation of that just comes up like, okay, I'm going to starve myself, barely eat any calories. I'm going to take up running, and or I'm going to do Orange Theory or both, and some weight loss happens, and then come month one or month two at the end, you plateau or you struggle to keep up with that kind of restriction in general, and then you give up altogether. Maybe you gain some more fat. You know, that's a really standard situation that happens to a lot of us, because the easiest thing for, again, everyone with a background who doesn't really know a ton about, you know, anatomy, physiology, as well as nutrition, that's kind of like what you would interpret from eat less, move more, right? And that's what I've heard time and time again from hundreds of clients over the last decade. And so it's not as simple as just eat less, move more. I would rather you focus on foundational pillars that naturally relate to the big picture of your overall body composition, health and well-being, etc. But I also want to add that I'm making this episode for anyone who maybe has also been in a state of comfort or maybe even a state of struggle, like on the opposite end, the last several years to maybe a decade or more, and you've somehow gained so much body fat, you don't know where to start. You feel hopeless. You kind of feel like, okay, maybe I'll just take Ozempic or something because that'll kickstart my fat loss and I'll feel better about myself, you know, and that's totally valid and okay. I know some people do that, but that's not necessarily going to last for you. And that's the biggest thing about some of these fast fat loss things. And I would really advise against them on their own, and or if it's just not in conjunction with really good foundational habit changes, because they, again, they're not going to last, because you will probably fall back into the comfort of the habits that you've built that got you to the body fat percentage that you are now, right? And so just being real with yourself and observing that, like there's no shame to feel for that happening. I know that it can feel so shameful because we are in a society that just definitely fat shames people, especially females. And the thing that really frustrates me from all the years of coaching is that a lot of people don't realize that there is a spectrum of reasons that females put on excess body fat. And dominantly, my females that have put on the most, it's usually following a major trauma. Like hands down, if we got to the root
of when a lot of my female clients went from a healthy body fat percentage or lifestyle, et cetera, into above upwards of 40% body fat and more. It's typically for a trauma-based reason. There's something that happened to them, and trauma can even change your gut bacteria, change the flora in there, and cause you to not have a metabolic environment that is healthy for losing fat. And there's so many like bro science guys and just by the book science dudes out there, and even females, you know, there's a lot of females kind of drinking the Kool-Aid on it too, where they do just push the eat less, move more, hormones don't matter, that's a lie, you know, blah, 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 they say all that stuff. But in reality, they don't realize how much, especially females, because we are so, you know, or our feminine energy rather, not just females, but our feminine energy puts us into a position where we are really connected to our bodies and souls through our experiences, struggles, stressors, etc. And so if you're somebody who went through something and you had inexplicable fat gain out of nowhere, like that is not necessarily your fault. How would you define the role of the gut in regards to your overall well-being of a human?
Yeah, I mean, that's a really big question. I mean, Hippocrates, who is the so-called founder of modern medicine, who knows if that's really true, but Hippocrates 2,500 years ago said all disease begins in the gut. And we really know that it's true today with all the thousands and thousands of studies that have come out on the microbiome and how there's a gut-brain axis. We know now that 70% of our immune system is in the gut. Our gut makes 95% of our serotonin. And literally, we can't survive if we can't break down the dietary proteins coming in into amino acids. Our gut also makes a lot of nutrients, like vitamin K2, which is required for blood clotting, biotin, which is vitamin B7, folate, which is vitamin B9. I mean, the gut does so many things. It even makes serotonin so that we can make melatonin. And so it's like without the gut being in balance, nothing will be in balance. And I think the first thing that'll go is the immune system, because that's literally where our immune system is.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's fascinating. And I've definitely firsthand seen that a ton in a lot of my clients. And sometimes it's just as simple as like getting a good quality, more rounded diet with good fiber sources that have a lot of different, you know, antioxidants and such in it that just seems to help. Very basic, but like it does a lot for them, especially living in the Pacific Northwest. You know, everybody just hears vitamin D, you know, and all that stuff. But it's like, well, actually, let's like look into some more gut supportive stuff to help your immune system, right? So that's cool. And I remember too reading. Are you familiar with the Your Brain on Food by Dr. Numandu? She talks about how it's fascinating that is it the neurons. Like extend all the way when you're born and developing, they extend all the way down into like the top of your intestinal tract and such too. So that's like where like the brain benefits come from and stuff. And I thought that was pretty fascinating because it kind of helps you better understand like, yeah, your gut health can really interfere with your mental health, right?
Yeah, it's amazing how the gut makes so many of our neurotransmitters. I think it's like, it's just incredible. I mean, even like 50% of our dopamine, for example, is made in the gut. It's just... So if the gut's off, we're going to be low in dopamine, we're going to be low in serotonin, we're going to be low in GABA, which helps the nervous system sort of regulate and go into that kind of balanced state of like rest.
Do you find that it's really common for you to see patients with gut dysbiosis and mental health struggles or anything in that zone?
Yeah, definitely. It almost seems like it just goes hand in hand. I mean, especially these days, kind of post-pandemic. I know that anxiety and depression have certainly risen a lot over these last few years. I'm sure you've seen that probably in your clients too. And there's always a gut piece. The thing is too, is stress will wreck the gut as well. I mean, it sloughs the lining of the gut. We no longer absorb our nutrients as well. And then it can kind of throw off those hormones that the gut makes as well. It makes, you know, 6 or 7 different hormones too. What does the gut not do? You know,
it's fascinating. And it's really interesting too, because to my understanding, the gut health is relatively like quote unquote newer on the scene because we finally have microscopes that can observe and see all the gut bugs doing their thing, right? Like early 2000s is actually when we first were able to see that.
Right. Yeah. I think... I think one thing, and this probably, I was looking a little bit at some of your stuff. I mean, I follow you, but I was just kind of checking out what you've been up to a little bit, just with what you've been posting. And I feel like you really do a great job of sort of empowering women to look at their bodies more holistically and not be sort of reduced to just this body or this lab value or this disease. And I think that even some holistic providers sort of end up accidentally, maybe unconsciously, taking a little bit of a reductionist approach to health and just looking at a person as like a gut or a bunch of probiotics in their gut or, you know, just SIBO or PCOS or whatever. And I think that it's really refreshing when providers don't do that. And it takes a lot of intention because I think we're also trained to look at everything in a reductionist perspective. And so when I'm looking at a person, one of the first things I'm doing is looking at their gut, but I'm looking at all the different elements that sort of bring it together, as opposed to just being like, oh, let's run a stool test. Let's look and see if your bacteria is good. It's like looking at all the elements and then seeing if it tells a story and kind of putting the story together with who they are and what their symptoms are to kind of understand what's going on.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's something that I've been really a big fan of, seeing you when you've been able to work with my clients and when you've talked about other patients that you've worked with too and your experience. But I think that that's something, even from my scale, not as a doctor, when I have conversations with my clients about their lifestyle with fitness or nutrition, you know, all the basics, I find that they are not being asked those questions of like, how stressed are you? Like, do you comprehend how stressed you are? Because that seems to be a really common thing that a lot of us, especially females, because we can juggle so many balls at once, that like, how we perceive our stress is also hard for us to articulate sometimes. And I feel like a lot of my clients, when they're talking to their doctors like you, you know, you definitely ask a lot of more in-depth questions than a lot of doctors than my clients have seen in the past, but they don't seem to think about stress and maybe like talk you through it. Like, what exactly does a level 5 look for you? Because maybe your body is actually like, that's a level 10, you know, and then we don't think that like that could be possibly interfering with our gut health, right? But stress is one of the biggest impactors, as far as I've observed.
Some people just like the fact that they feel needed. You know, there's a lot of different reasons for things. Ultimately, for me, I just really liked to have impact and help people answer these questions and problems they had and access their best health or get into a better mindset or, you know, a variety of things, get stronger. And so I realized as time was going on, especially this year, which a lot of my clients over 30 would always tell me that when you hit 30, like your engine light goes on. And people say all these different ages, but most of the time people were saying 30 is when they noticed like things just weren't recovering as fast and more issues were happening and all these different things. And that was definitely true. I think like the morning I woke up when I turned 30, I had like a massive crick in my neck. And I mean, my dog took off after a chipmunk and I managed to hold onto his leash the entire time. But usually, I mean, at times when he's done that before, my neck would not be all busted. And I woke up so busted that morning and I was like, dang it, all of my friends were right. But with all of that said, I would say that my adrenal fatigue symptoms were screaming at me. It was becoming very obvious that I needed to listen and I needed to prioritize myself and I needed to show, you know, my following on Instagram and my clients that you can survive taking care of yourself. And frankly, you can only survive if you finally like prioritize and take care of yourself at least as much of the time as possible, 80-20, 90-10, you know, whatever would work out for you. It still needs to be the highest percentages you taking care of yourself or else you're just going to run yourself to the ground. And that's not good. And it's not necessary. You know, we don't have to just let ourselves crumble apart for, you know, the bigger victory of some sort of honor of not honoring ourselves. You know, it's kind of ironic in a way or coincidental, whatever word it would be. But I would say for those of you wondering, like, what symptoms did I start to notice? I definitely noticed like body aches, like my joints were kind of angry and inflamed and achy. Frankly, my muscles were not recovering from my workouts. And I didn't have the energy to go to the gym for the first time in the last year. And this was all mostly noticed, I'd say most of June 2023 until around February 2024. This is when I started to really start to notice some things were off. So my muscles weren't recovering well. I had like zero stamina in my workouts. And I do not recommend anybody ever just use pre-workout every day if they don't have natural energy to some extent, because that'll just make you overtrain, because you need those feedback cues from your body because it's telling you something. It's telling you if you're under-rested, if you're underfed, if you're underhydrated, you know, and you can't feel those things if you're hopped up on a bunch of pre-workout crack stuff. So I noticed that my workouts were really lackluster. I didn't really want to do more than like 9 sets, and I wasn't prioritizing the gym either, default of not feeling like I wanted to go to the gym. And I had definitely a lot of brain fog that was always creeping in. And even like, I'll be real with you guys, sometimes like putting together words and phrases in a good manner for the podcast in that chapter was really tough. And I had no idea like what could have been sabotaging until I kind of really started to notice it and then be like, what could be sabotaging my brain, you know? And more than just the adrenal fatigue situation going on with my hormones in my body, but also I had built a bad habit of kind of weekend cocktails. I had gotten into, you know, Instagram has all these cool little cocktail people and they make these really aesthetic recipes. And so I would be so stressed throughout the week that on the weekend I'd be like, I want to make this one, or I want to make a version of this one. And I'd have like maybe like 1 to 3 cocktails a weekend, which I totally know that that's not that much, but it's enough to throw off your brain and your recovery and your sleep quality and all that stuff that all just melds in together every time you have a single ounce of liquor, including a beer, including wine, you know, all that kind of stuff, especially in the female body. You know, this is very more, your female body is much more sensitive, especially if you're naturally cycling. So for me, I started to realize way too much alcohol, all this different stuff. I wasn't sleeping as good, and alcohol causes you to not sleep well. And then it spikes a cortisol response in the morning for this kind of deficit that happens with your serotonin, I believe, or dopamine. It's one of those. And so your body's response is to pump more cortisol. So then I was having way more cortisol in the morning just from those habits. And then it would crash in the afternoon, and then it would weirdly spike again in the evening a bit. So I'd be like wired and tired. Sometimes we call that wired and tired. And so all of those things I started to really notice. And those are all symptoms of adrenal fatigue. Okay, so the first thing that you're really going to need to do is make sure that you gradually transition off the medication. So you should make sure to work with your healthcare provider to taper off of the med gradually in efforts to reduce the risk of weight regain immediately, because there is not a lot of long-term studies on just taking it, going up to a 1.5 or so dosage and then completely dropping off. There's a lot to be said about the people who have done that just because they're like, oh, I was too nauseous, or, you know, this or that. I just didn't like it. You know, I didn't feel good. And then they just stop, and then they immediately gain all that weight back. And then they go online and social media and saying like, oh, that stuff doesn't really work. You know, I gained the weight right back, or I gained more weight back. There's a lot of little things that go into why that happens, but one of the big ones can be that you didn't taper off the medication, and the medication works through communication of peptide receptors, and it's communicating differently in your body than just putting in like a fake hormone, like birth control. You're actually trying to encourage a change of how your brain and body and your stomach is communicating for your hunger, how the speed at which you are digesting. You know, there's a lot of things that are going on. And if you immediately remove that artificial communication, things are going to most likely go awry immediately, versus there's a lot of evidence and experience where people have slowly gone down back from, let's say they go all the way up to 1.5, they go to 1.25, they go to 1. A few weeks later, they go to 0.75 or 0.5, and then they stay there for maybe a month or two, and then they go down to 0.25 again. You know, that's a proper way to therapeutically reduce that medication in your system and have a smoother transition with your lifestyle changes. Okay, we're going to talk about those lifestyle changes in a moment, but that is really important for you to do, especially with the guidance of your practitioner, because a lot of people don't do that when they just decide to get off of it on their own. And then there's a lot of repercussions for that. So I put that as number one on my tips because it is very, very, very important that you take that component seriously when you are trying to have long-term success phasing off of a GLP-1. Okay, so I kind of have these listed in order of importance. So number one, the transitioning off seems to be the most important thing, specifically when utilizing these GLP-1s. So that's why it is the first thing I talked about. The second thing is that you definitely need to prioritize adopting healthy habits. So this should be done while you are taking the GLP-1. This shouldn't be something that's backseated or you wait until you're ready to phase off of it. You're going to have much faster and higher quality results using a GLP-1 if you adopt healthy habits while you're on it, because then while you're transitioning out of it and slowly lessening the GLP-1 therapy, you're going to want to have these in place. You need to have your nutrition locked down as close as possible to ideal as you can, and you need to have exercise into your routine weekly, if not daily, because your body is at a completely different mass size, and that's very jarring for your metabolism. And as you get off of something that's artificially adjusting your metabolism, and AKA it's actually making it really slow, you're going to have a hard time transitioning back into, you know, eating regularly and such if you are not already eating healthy, nourishing foods that wouldn't be putting on excess fat in the first place. When we were young and starting birth control, you know, around age 15-ish or so is a pretty common time. Usually parents have their daughters get on it because they're so afraid of their daughters getting pregnant that they are just like, you know what, peace of mind, just start you on birth control. Easy, done, you know. And then a lot of other, you know, a lot of my peers and such, they started birth control because of acne or, you know, really heavy periods. But the more I've learned over time, I've realized that we shouldn't be using oral contraceptives as a band-aid, because it's just pausing the problem that is causing that, because it's not normal to have painful periods to the point where you need to get medicated to deal with it. And it's not normal to have crazy outbreaks of acne. You know, a lot of people just chalk it up to puberty, which plays a big role because your sex hormones are really like expressing more aggressively, but they don't just kick in. Like, it's kind of a misconception, especially lately, that like hormones, your sex hormones just kick in during puberty. They just actually shift into fertility zone the most. At puberty, we are expressing our hormone balances from the moment we're born, you know, because that's, if you're female or male, that's what's going to help drive what parts develop on you and all that kind of stuff. But it's important to know that when it comes to birth control, using it as a band-aid to kind of, you know, help your acne go away or whatever, your acne is telling you something. All the symptoms that we experience, you know, heavy periods, painful periods, a lot of blood clots, a lot of fatigue, acne, you know, like I just said, those are all expressions of an imbalance that's already there. And nowadays we have a tough time with our environmental endocrine disruptors. So things that can influence our hormones. And so from a young age, you know, a lot of these young girls are getting influenced through the food they eat, the products they put on, you know, especially makeup and lotions and all this different stuff, the candles they burn in their room, their lifestyle factors, whether or not they're very active, you know, all these different things come together to influence your hormone balance from even before. And then puberty exacerbates it. Puberty is basically just like, all right, now we're going to spike your estrogen and your progesterone because we want you to start being fertile, because this is when your genetics are supposed to start being able to have babies. Okay. I hope that makes sense to you, because when you really peel back the curtain and like realize that that's the purpose of puberty and what all those symptoms mean, hopefully it can help you better understand that like those are signs that something is off, that you should be working on figuring out what's imbalanced and healing it from a younger age versus just slapping birth control on it. And that's all stuff that, like, I wish I knew better. Fortunately for me, I didn't get on birth control because of my period sucking, like a lot of my peers did, including my sister even. But for me, like, I actually had pretty standard normal periods, which was probably a sign that my hormones were decently balanced. And then I went on it because, you know, of the classic fear of getting pregnant. And that's totally real. I totally understand it. But I honestly look back and I wish we spent a lot more time teaching our young females about fertility awareness and understanding their cycles so that we can be more empowered to know, like, when are we in our cycle? Because there's just a very small window of being able to get pregnant. And if we better understood that and took the reins on, you know, avoid abstinence during that 1 week window, or using other methods and understanding how to safely use those methods so you can prevent risk of, like, condom breakage or any of that. That's really important to understand. And I will say, with me having just said that, this conversation is going to be extremely transparent and open, like a conversation just between the two of us. So if anything, talking about, you know, anything to do with birth control, including sex and stuff, like, I'm not going to get in depth and visual, but there are going to be terms and words and things that are just, they need to be heard and communicated, because we can't keep censoring this stuff when it comes to female health. And I've been absolutely behind the movement of just being more transparent and talking about periods and making things more normal, because they are so normal. They happen all the time. And it's really old-fashioned and outdated and lame, in my opinion, to, like, be like, ew, don't talk about periods, or ew, don't talk about sex, or any of this stuff. Because honestly, I think it just keeps driving the issue of people just thinking birth control is the only option and the only way to prevent babies. And it's not. And it's frankly the most damaging to our systems if we stay on it long term. There's totally reasons. I totally understand when women have endometriosis or any PCOS sometimes, and their only relief from the pain is using birth control, like only immediate relief. But it isn't the easiest way out, because all it does, guys, is push the pause on the issue. It doesn't heal it. Even though it may feel like your brain's going to think, like, oh, because I don't have these symptoms anymore, this fixed it for me. It did not fix it for you. It put a pause button, and it could actually make it worse in the future, especially if you're trying to conceive or you start to go through menopause, you know, if you don't want kids at all. Both of those things are perfectly great options and your own choice. But at the same time, you just got to remember that birth control is always a pause button or a regression. And this is me saying it not to scare you from it, but to be really freaking real, because I'm just really tired of these different resources. Specifically, it's usually like conventional medicine, Western medicine based practitioners who just read the basic little study that the company that is selling the pills did to continue to sell the pills, quote unquote, safely. And they're not learning. And there's more that are now, which is great. But majority of them say, like, oh no, weight gain is not actually a known side effect of birth control. Oh no, depression isn't related. You know, it's probably because you've changed your habits. You know, they always blame us for it, not the way that it does inherently affect our hormones, because your hormones are your metabolism, are your mood. So many things like that are controlled by your hormones, you know, and so people downplaying hormones don't understand. All right, that closes out the final episode of our season 2, 2024. I hope that you guys really enjoyed the Best of the Rebellion Women's Wellness favorites. And I know for sure you guys are going to love season 3 next year. It's going to just continue to get even better, especially if you specifically enjoy all of these niche women's wellness topics. That will be for sure something to tune into next season, okay? But Let me know which of these episodes were your favorite if you want to connect with me on social media. And again, I do want to invite you to reach out and tell me if there's any topics you'd like me to elaborate on or cover in general. Maybe I haven't even talked about it yet before. There's a lot of great episodes too, guys, to check out from season one. Definitely go back through if you are new here and you haven't, you know, explored Rebel Wellness. But there's definitely some too that I'm going to, you know, as science updates and as my own experience and opinions evolve, as they should for all of us in this kind of health and wellness science space, there's going to be some re-recordings or further recordings of certain topics from especially season one, because, you know, science moves quick and we should be always questioning what we know, you know what I mean? So I'm definitely gonna be your chick for all of that. So, all right, Rebel, that's it for today's episode. Share it to your Instagram story, tag me, or send it to a bestie who you think needs to hear these clips or might want to be inspired. But celebrate your strength and nourishment. Walk with confidence. I'll catch you next year on another episode of Rebel Wellness. What did you think about that episode? If you enjoyed it, I hope that you would come join my community on Instagram at Rebel Wellness Podcast or my coaching page at Kaylee Loren or both. I would love to see your name pop up on my new follows list. I might say hello if I catch you. And I would also like to invite you to come check out my website, coachkales.com, if you're interested in seeing any more of the educational learning resources I have created for you. I have a whole ton of amazing free downloads that you can like dip your toe in the water of what working with me looks like. And if you are really vibing with what I have to say and how I teach it, come explore my courses that are available for purchase. They are all do-it-yourself. In the near future, I plan to have some awesome group coaching that will be all live, so stay tuned for that. And the best way to know when I'm going to launch those is through my monthly wellness newsletter, which is my hand-curated, not AI-generated, monthly all things health and wellness newsletter that I created to be your new favorite resource for staying up to date with the latest in the health world, self-care resources that I've created, and a bunch of the clean beauty picks that I personally use myself, and a whole lot more, as well as early access and discounts to anything that I create in the future for specifically my newsletter sign up. So if you'd like to sign up, head to coachkales.com and add yourself to my mailing list. Last but not least, I would absolutely love it if you would help our podcast grow by simply sharing a rating or review wherever you stream and are listening to me right now, and share it on your social medias or text it to some friends or family members if this episode resonated and was something that you think could help somebody else, because I really would love to help anybody in your circle if I've been helping you. So I absolutely am so grateful that you're here. And if you listened all the way through, you are a real one. So all right, Rebel, until next episode.